everybody. Jonathan Dorr with you once again. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you're doing okay wherever you are in the world. It's challenging times, isn't it? The coronavirus in full swing. Speaking to people in the United States, in the United Kingdom, here in Australia, everybody is facing a challenging time right now. But as I keep saying, we are coming through this. No storm lasts forever. Incredible men and women around the world working towards solutions, vaccines. But right now, we're all just doing what's sensible. So as you tune in, I hope you're going okay. Hope you're navigating this time. Many of us have suddenly got kids at home 7 days a week, 24/7, which is creating wonderful new opportunities for personal growth. But listen, I'm glad you're with us. We've got a fantastic show for you today. Today, I'm going to be talking to Kimberly Evans, who is behind a wonderful project called Nourish the Workplace. Kimberly was in education for over 19 years and realized, as many of us do, that the greatest resource in education is not buildings, it's not programs or pedagogy. The greatest resource in any school is always the teachers and the leaders that are in there. And of course, as we know very well, when these teachers and leaders get exhausted, when they don't look after themselves, when they get run down, then a whole bunch of things flow from that, as we know. I mean, students aren't getting the best care pastorally, educationally as they could. People break, people burn out. So in this episode, Kimberly's going to take us through her backstory. She's going to tell us, we're going to talk about, I guess, some of the key indicators for teachers, signs to look out for. We're going to start talking about what makes a great school, what things that leaders and teachers can do to really improve that level of self-care and well-being to help both individuals and whole school communities flourish. Okay, that's it from me. Let's jump into this episode. Grab yourself a drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy this wonderful discussion with Kimberly Evans from Nourish the Workplace. Hello there, Kimberly. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me all right?
It's absolutely fantastic. We had a call last week, which was less than fantastic due to the audio quality. So this is really good.
Good.
Why don't we jump straight in? Kimberly Evans, welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. Thank you for making some time for us.
I'm more than happy to be here.
You, unless I'm mistaken, are you a runner?
Yes, I was meant to be doing the London Marathon this year.
Really? Because when we checked your Twitter feed, I was like, had a sort of strong sense you're a runner. I've sort of fallen in love with it here as well. So as much as we're not allowed out too often, it's just great to get out.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's bringing me some sanity, I have to say, still being able to run.
Are you in full lockdown yet? Are you able to get out?
We're allowed out once a day for exercise, and we're just hoping that that continues, because over the weekend some people were flouting that rule slightly and bending it. Because the weather's really nice here, unseasonably nice at the moment. So people were flocking to the parks and the beaches and things like that. Not really to sit on the beach, but just to walk. But there was too many people there. So we're hoping that they're going to be able to let us continue having our one piece of exercise a day.
Absolutely. I saw an article today that the New Zealand Health Minister was just, was handing out all this advice about you can't leave your house, you can't do anything. And then he was found photographed 25 kilometres from his house on his own mountain bike doing a training session.
Yes, we had a very similar thing. So the Scottish health advisor, not the minister, wasn't a politician, but she was like the senior health person. She had a second home 50 miles away, and she'd be going to her second home every weekend, whereas she'd been telling everybody else not to do that.
Absolutely. And your prime minister's not looking too good at the moment either, is he?
No, that's kind of worrying. I think that actually might make people take it seriously. Actually, it's awful that it's had to come to that, but yeah, that might make people take it seriously, because that's been very unexpected.
Yeah, look, it's so different all over the world. We've got a huge number of listeners, and big shout out to all our American listeners who are right in the thick of it. But things have kind of calmed down a little bit here. Like, we're in lockdown, but it looks like the curve has kind of resolved. But what's the feeling for you guys? Is it sort of still in the upswing?
Yes, I think the next 2 weeks are going to be whether or not we see whether or not we flatten the curve, and whether or not these things are working, or whether or not we've got to go stronger. Wow. And people are hoping we're not going to have to go quite as strict with the rules as Italy and Spain, because their numbers are awful. And they're in a really strict lockdown, as in you're not allowed to leave the house unless you've got an official piece of paper.
Wow. So listen, we're going to talk about well-being and education and a whole bunch of interesting stuff, but let's start with the truth. How have you adapted to lockdown with family and all that sort of stuff? How are you doing?
We're okay. My eldest daughter had her main exams cancelled, her GCSEs. So that's like end of a key stage kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a worry, but actually we've had all of that sorted out. We now know we're just waiting to see what they're going to actually give her for her results. But we're kind of used to being like this, not in strict lockdown, but my husband's a head of three primary schools.
Yeah.
So actually we're used to being on long summer holidays all at home together.
Okay.
So it feels a little bit like a school holiday at the moment.
Right.
So we're okay. The kids are starting to get bored. I've got two teenage girls, so they're quite happy just laying in bed a lot at the moment. And the nice weather has really helped, because we've been out in the back garden. They've been playing badminton and stuff like that out in the back garden. But
yeah,
I think the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to get. But at the moment, we're okay. We're all kind of, we've got a nice big house, so that helps. So we're all just kind of in different parts of the house.
Yeah,
okay. So all in different rooms for most of the day.
it's like quarantine within quarantine. It's like
we've got some space, because I think that's hard, isn't it, when you're with somebody all of the time. I think that's when it gets kind of hard, 100%. That you don't feel like you've got your space. Have you not, even if you're not traveling to work, you've not got your commute to just go and sit in your car and listen to what music you want. You've not got the ability to watch what telly you want to watch.
Absolutely.
Your kids pestering you for food all the time.
Yes. We had three children under the age of 3.5. So we had our super close together, and they're now 13, 12 and 10. And so the dynamics are interesting, and my wife is amazing. She's, she has a list in her life of things that she would never do. And one of those was teach children, like school stuff. And
goodness, yes.
So the pivot has been amazing. And so one of my daughters comes into the office with me, and I've got a very private office, which is great, but it's testing us. But I think you've probably observed this too. Some of the things that are interesting is we've got to know neighbours in a way that we wouldn't have normally, and the kids are like out riding bikes more. There's as tragic as this circumstance is, there's also been like we're seeing a lot of people exercising, a lot of people out doing stuff and keeping active that, you know, previously wouldn't have been.
Yeah, there are some things that I think, I'm hoping that because it's going to be quite a long time for all of us before we even get back to any kind of normality, that it's long enough for these things to set in to be a habit. So people will hopefully realise just how good it was for them to get out and have a walk every day, where they weren't really walkers as such. But that counts as exercise, that when you come back from school or from work, you can just nip out for a quick half an hour walk will do you the world of good, because I don't think enough people really do that.
Yeah, I'm going to desperately try and not turn this into a running podcast, but I've always been like kept very, very fit, but I've been a cyclist for the last 10 years. But I took up running again when this kicked in, and I just went out on Sunday and just ran a half marathon on my own. And this weekend, I'm just going to go and do a marathon and see how I go, just around the neighborhood.
Wow. That's impressive.
But I'll send you a link later, because my Instagram, I went out this morning at dawn and it was unspeakably beautiful. It was incredible. Kangaroos, the sunrise.
Wow.
My run was terrible because I kept stopping photographing everything. my stats on my GPS and everything were terrible.
Yeah.
Stop. Look at that.
Yes.
So
but that's the thing, is you're stopping and noticing. That's what is nice, isn't it? Is that you can. And I normally run with music, but occasionally I've been not running with music while this has been happening, because it is just really nice to just feel how quiet it is, and you can hear the birds. We live quite rurally, but there's always been planes overhead, and there's busy noise from traffic, however rural we are. And you can just hear the birds. It's lovely. Or just hear nothing, which is even nicer.
Absolutely. I mean, we live in the capital of Australia, here in Canberra, and I was up this morning at 4, like I tend to get up very early, and I went out to the front and it was dead silent. It was just extraordinary. Look, let's do this. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about really what we're doing here, and hopefully in this discussion, is we have thousands of teachers listening in all over the world who are This podcast would have been great before the lockdown.
Yes.
Because we could speak specifically to that daily educational context, and we'll do that. But also, obviously, there are teachers now who are, you know, pivoting. They've got their own kids at home. They're adapting to online learning. So we need to talk about well-being. We need to talk about really so much of what's on your heart. So take us through the backstory. You were in the education space for 19 years before beginning this new project, Nourish the Workplace. Take us through the story. What's brought you to this place in your life?
It kind of started a lot, well, about 5 or 6 years ago when I started my own network marketing business. I'm a consultant with Arbonne International.
Yep.
And I wanted to do that just to give myself something else for me. On a completely different note, my oldest daughter is autistic, and I was getting pulled and pulled and pulled into the world of trying to help autistic parents and trying to be helpful. Help, being helpful is in my nature.
Yeah.
And I found that I was spending a lot of time online trying to kind of help other people on forums and things like that. And it was consuming me. It really, really was consuming me. And it wasn't healthy at all. It really wasn't. And I needed to find another focus. So I started a network marketing company, which I've still got, I've still got that. And it gave me an insight into business, which I've never had before, because I've, you know, lived and breathed teaching all my life. It's what I wanted to do. Married to a teacher, my friends were all teachers, my mum worked in a school. It's all I've ever known. And I came across this world of something completely different, and that sparked something in me. So when I was having a bad time in school and my well-being wasn't great, a personality clash with the head teacher meant that my well-being was awful and a lot of other people's in the school was as well. I thought, hang on a second, I've actually got the expertise here to be able to do something about it.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where my youngest daughter was leaving that school. So I had to really think about what I was going to do. I was really only working at the school I was at because she was there and it was fitted in with our family life. And I thought, well, I could go and get a teaching job somewhere else, or I could try and do something, and I could try and actually make a difference. And I came to the idea of what needed. I saw like a gap in the market. Lots and lots of people were telling me to go and do my well-being and wellness work that I was doing with adults, with children. So I was doing a lot of healthy eating, a lot of mindfulness and things like that. But there wasn't any gaps in the market for children. There was an awful lot being sold and being put out for free by local government and things like that for children. So as much as that was, I was quite passionate about that, and that is incredibly important, being able to help the well-being of children and making sure they're looking after themselves, teaching them the right nutrition and right food, getting them to exercise, all of that kind of stuff from an early age. That wasn't a business opportunity, whereas there was with the adults. And then I realized as well that we're trying to help the children and we're not in the right place to help the children because we're not looking after ourselves properly. So that's where it all kind of evolved from, was instead of trying to put a sticking plaster on it, which was helping the children, I was kind of helping it from right from the start. So if you empower teachers to have their own well-being and look after them as well at school, then they've got all the tools they need to then look after the children, and it will then filter down and they will then be able to help the children effectively with their well-being, but also to teach them effectively. So that's where it all came about, really.
So what do you think lies at the heart of this? I mean, it sounds so obvious. It sounds so straightforward. It's the whole put your own mask on first. What do you think that it is specifically about the education context that just makes it so difficult for teachers to do this? Is it structural? Do you think it's personality? What do you think are some of the key things that make it so difficult for teachers to really prioritize this self-care?
Some of it is workload, but then the more that I talk to teachers, I realize that it's not necessarily workload. Like, if you took a snapshot of Twitter and Facebook groups and what they were talking about, it would come across as workload. But when you actually get down to it, most teachers are quite happy with their workload if they're treated right. if you just say thank you. If you, they know, you get into teaching realizing there's going to be a high workload. It's a bit like nursing, isn't it? And being a doctor, you know there's going to be long shifts. Yeah. You know, you don't go into medicine thinking that you're going to work 6 hours a day. That's just not, you know that that's not going to happen. And it's the same with education. You know the hours are long, you know it's stressful, but you do it because you love it. And actually, you will more than happily go that extra mile if you're being thanked. I think the difference why it's so hard for education to deal with it properly is because most people don't come from a business mindset from it. And also there's no customer necessarily satisfaction. So it's not like a business where you know that if your employees, if you're in a shop, for instance, and you have everyone standing around looking really miserable, you're not likely to sell anything. If you go into a shop and you go into a shop and a worker is stressed and a little bit rude, then the customer's going to walk straight back out and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Whereas that's not how education works. So they get away with treating their teachers really badly sometimes, and not necessarily badly on purpose, but just forgetting that that's important because they can't see how it affects the children. Most teachers will just plaster on a smile when they walk in the classroom because they know that they have to, because they care about those children, and the teachers care so much about the children that they put their own well-being and wellness to one side in the hour that they're with those children.
So do you see it as a leadership question? Do you see it top down, as you know, we did the interview with Steve from New York a couple of days ago, who's a leadership specialist, and you know, we talk about the fish rots from the head down. Obviously there's a lot of inputs here. There's the structural inputs and cultural inputs, but is leadership sort of at the top of that list, that if you have mentally healthy, integrated people leading who are building vibrant cultures, care about their people, you see obviously better well-being? Is it a leadership issue?
I think it's majoritively that, yes. We do have to, as teachers, take responsibility for our own well-being. We do have to do that. We can't keep blaming other people. So that's, I think, a separate point. But I do think it's important for leaders to lead in that way and to set a good example. But not just set a good example, but also ensure that everybody is following that. So it's not just about, I'm going to go home early, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. They do need to make sure that they're giving their staff the tools to be able to do that. So I've worked with leaders that have tried to think that they're leading by example and going home at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and not taking work home with them and being very vocal about that, but they're not actually giving their staff the ability to do that because they're not either empowering them to do so, or they're giving them too much work to do so they can't do that. Absolutely. Or they're not really noticing that they're not. So you have to lead by example, but within that, give your staff the tools to be able to follow it up as well.
Absolutely. Well, I think our attrition rates here at the moment are 50% within, I think it's the first 3 years, and I'm pretty sure the UK would be similar. I remember my first year as a teacher, it was, you know, that first year that I graduated, I was, you know, mid-20s. I got married 3 months into my first year. I had a full teaching load. Then I got coaching like rugby as well, and then supervision duties and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's just like, it doesn't seem like rocket science. It's often as if it's just no one thinks through how are we maintaining this resource of people. Is it because we're not seeing it as a resource? We're sort of looking at school systems and going, well, here's the funding, here's the pedagogy, here's, you know, the capital works, the buildings, but we can talk about human resource, but do you think we're just not seeing our people, our teachers, as the crucial resource?
Yeah, you're very right. We're not looking after the most important person in that school. The most important person in that school isn't the child. the most important person is the teacher, because the teacher is the one that's going to look after all of those children. They're going to be able to lead others. They're going to be able to lead their children. And if you don't look after that very crucial cog in the wheel, it is all going to fall apart. I think as well, because there's always people wanting to be teachers, I think some people get complacent with, oh, it's okay, we can just get somebody else.
That's right.
But it is getting to the point now with the recruitment crisis that we're all having, is that we are having a lack of teachers. That's how people are suddenly having to realise that I can't just treat people like rubbish and expect to get somebody else applying the next year, because people aren't applying for the jobs.
Yeah.
But people are kind of realising this a little bit too late in the day, of thinking, oh, well, maybe there's a reason why no one's applying for my jobs, and maybe there's a reason why all my staff are leaving.
Correct.
And that's, it is clicking in, but a bit too late, unfortunately.
Well, as you were talking, it was sort of reminded me a bit of military strategy in the First World War. It was like, well, we'll just keep sending them in, yes. and I'm sure we'll be able to find some more.
Yes.
It's like that, some people would remember that that famous show Blackadder, where Rowan Atkinson, it's the World War One episode, and you know, the general says, "We want you to know that when you go in, we'll be right behind you." And Blackadder whispers, "Yes, about 30 miles behind you."
Exactly. Yes, and that's, I think, that's exactly, you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly how some teachers feel, I think, because they feel like they're on the front line. They're on the and leaders don't understand, because that is the issue. I mean, I'm 20 years into this profession. I trained in a whole different realm of education. You know, it's changed massively. And leaders that are only, you know, my age, mid-40s, have completely forgotten what it's like to be a newly qualified teacher.
Yeah.
20 years later, but also, they're not even, they never trained in those circumstances. So they don't know what it's like. I didn't have to do the level of marking that some people do at the moment. I didn't ever have to do data things that these guys are having to do now. So it's very hard. It would be very hard for me anyway to be empathic as to how much work is involved in that. But when you were talking about it coming through, maybe as well, we need to look at teaching when people are taking it on for their own benefits, is actually teaching people how to look after their well-being at teacher training universities.
Yeah.
And teaching people, it should be on the curriculum how to get through your first 5 years of teaching.
I remember,
how do you mark books? How do you deal with this level of stress? How do you deal with the emotional load of dealing with children with issues?
Yeah.
I don't think there's that level of care put into teacher training.
Exactly. And I think one of the things Karen and I have noticed with our own kids now going into the school system is the pressure on teachers to have individualized learning plans for, you know, sometimes almost the entire class, and the ability to be creative. And that's what hit me, like, in my first few years of teaching, is it was like, how can I stay creative in this intensity? Like, it's difficult, especially for introverts, you know, to kind of stay creative in an intense situation. Now, I wanted to ask you, let's begin with the warning signs. We want to talk about strategies and what we can do and what you think works, but let's begin with, what do teachers need to be aware of in terms of warning signs in their own lives? What are the sorts of key things that you look for and go, you know, these are problems, these are issues, symptoms, trigger points that teachers need to be across?
Health, really. If you're constantly being ill, I think that's a really, really good trigger point to watch out for. And I think that's where it gets missed a lot, because everybody just blames that on the fact that they're around children all the time that have got germs.
Yeah.
You can build up an immunity to that. But actually, if you're being ill all the time and you're constantly getting colds and coughs, then that's a sign that your immune system is run down, and that your immune system is run down because you're stressed.
Yeah.
So people need to, if they're constantly being ill, and I do ask that on my survey, are people ill a lot? Are people off sick a lot at your school? Because they don't realize that that's a sign of stress.
Yeah.
They realize that that's a sign of children being ill. Whereas actually that's one of the first things that I noticed, that if you've got people that are off sick a lot, then that's that's often the reason why. And sometimes as well, people will call in sick for mental health reasons, but because they are, I mean, it's getting better, isn't it? Lots better about the realization that you can have things like, you might need a mental health day to get over something, or not get over it, but to deal with something. But people might ring in and say they've got a tummy bug, when actually it's a mental health issue.
Yeah.
Because they don't feel like they'd get the support if they said that I'm having a real bad time with my mental health. I need a couple of days to just kind of get my feet back. So if you
do you find that people are more comfortable, teachers are more comfortable talking about that? Do you think teachers are getting more confident at being able to say to people in leadership, look, I'm struggling with anxiety, I'm struggling with depression, I'm just not up, I need a day? Like, are people doing that, or are they still burying it under, you know, some other kind of excuse?
Yep. I do think it is getting better. There's a couple of people that I work with on Twitter on a Thursday evening. We have Ed Wellbeing Goals hashtag hour, and there's a few people on there that come up every week, and they're having quite big mental health problems, and they're really open. We've worked really hard with them to say, you know, you need to be open with your head teacher to say, you know, I'm struggling this week. And they've had brilliant support from their head teachers, really good support of being able to say, look, this week I'm struggling this week. And they've sent them home and said, go home, have the afternoon, we'll sort it out, you know, let's nip this in the bud really quickly. There's been other people that I've even worked with as well that have had issues surrounding that, and have had some really good support with an understanding from colleagues, knowing that just because you can't see it, because it's not a broken bone, doesn't mean to say that it doesn't need healing. And they've had some time off and been able to come back and deal with the school day an awful lot better. So it's getting better.
So
it's not there yet, but it is getting better.
So we're looking at, in terms of helping teachers identify early warnings, we've got the physical lack of wellness, we've got the mental health stuff creeping up. I notice one for me, like if I'm just recently with having the kids at home, is that I'll be, you know, more short-tempered than normal. Like I'm usually pretty placid, but it's like I'll find myself snapping. And I know many of listeners are going, not you, Jonathan. I go, yeah, yes, yes, Jonathan. You know, so often it's that irritability, isn't it? It's like you just find you get triggered by stuff that normally, and I've only recently gone, oh, hang on, that's a symptom of a sense of overwhelm. So what else? We've got the physical symptoms, the sickness, we've got mental health. Any other key triggers that you'd say to people, look, these are indications that you need to get on top of how you're going?
This is a strange one, but eating and drinking, and knowing whether or not your staff have got the facilities and the time to have lunch. So if you're constantly missing lunch, why are you missing lunch? And saying to people, and them saying, well, I just haven't got time. Well, you need to make time. You can't. This is one of my big things, is we wouldn't dream of saying to a child, you can't have your lunch today. You've got too much work to do. You're not allowed out at playtime at all. At lunchtime, you need to sit at your desk. You can eat a little bit if you like. You can eat like a couple of mouthfuls, and you can have a little bit of drink, but that's it. No going to the toilet, no having any break. You sit at that desk, you get all that work finished for the whole entire hour. We wouldn't dream of treating children like that. We're constantly saying, get out, go on, go out and have a run around. You need to go and eat your dinner properly, or slow down. You know, like the boys, we used to work in a primary school, and the boys would just literally throw their food down their mouth in 5 minutes so they could get out and play football.
Yeah.
Eat your lunch properly, eat a bit more. And why do we do that? Because we know that they need to be nutritionally fed to be able to cope with the afternoon. They're going to be able to concentrate better. Why do we give kids a breakfast? We give kids free breakfasts because we know that if you've got a full tummy, then your brain will work better. Mm. So we're getting, are your teachers eating properly? Have you got teachers that are just sat in their classrooms all lunchtime? Are you just sitting in your classroom as a teacher all lunchtime, just eating on the go, or not even eating at all, just grabbing a packet of biscuits or some crisps or something like that and eating on the go all the time? And that's a sign that you're just not taking the time for yourself. You can't keep going like that and expect to be able to just keep on going. Something's going to break sooner or later.
There's heaps in what you're saying. The first point is that it's fascinating that we're so good at doing it for children.
Yeah.
But what happens to us? Do you think it's just we just get older and kind of think we're grown-ups now and we should be tougher than this?
And I think as teachers, we just automatically put the children first. So if we're going off for our lunch and somebody needs something, we'll drop what we want to do to sort those children out. And if we're thinking, oh, it'd be really nice this afternoon, or look, the weather's lovely, it'd be really nice if we could just do this. Oh, I know what I'm going to do. We're going to do this for PE. So I'm going to scrap my afternoon and I'm going to go out now and I'm going to go and sort all the PE equipment out and I'm going to go and get all of that out. And we spend half an hour getting the PE equipment out and then that's our lunch time gone. Because we're doing something nice for the children. Or we're thinking, we've got to get all these books marked. And they, you know, those children are asking me whether or not I've marked their stories that they wrote. Oh, I really need to get that done because they want it done. And I want them to see how good they've done. So we spend all our lunchtime or our evening marking all their work so that we can do it for the children. And we need to be a little bit more selfish, I think.
So how do we find that balance? Because it's such a giving profession. How do you navigate? How do you teach educators to navigate that question? Like the gap between, I'd love to put all this equipment out there for them. I want to go and do this for them, but I also just need 15 minutes. How do you do it? How do you make that? What's the filter? How do you help people make that choice?
For teachers themselves, I think they really just, you need to teach them the whole thing, putting your own oxygen mask on first. You are going to be a better teacher if you take that time. If you take that time to just take 15 minutes. I have a hashtag called Find 15.
Yeah.
Which is, you've got to find 15 minutes in your day at work to just do something for you. Now, if you're not a big eater, you don't have to have lunch, but go and spend those 15 minutes in the staff room having a laugh with somebody, go and have a giggle with somebody, go and have a walk outside, which we're just talking about, you know, how is this all going to then create new habits? Maybe those 15 minutes you need to just leave the school gates and go for a little walk around the block and just clear your head. Maybe those 15 minutes needs to be you making yourself a cup of tea and actually drinking it while it's hot, or it needs to be you sitting and eating properly so that you can digest your food properly.
Yeah.
But you need to find those 15 minutes because it will make you a better teacher in the afternoon, because you'll be less snappy, as you said. You'll be more energized. You'll be a lot calmer and you can deal with things better. And it's just trying to have the, I don't know, I think it's part of CPD. You know, we go out and we do all of these things. I'm going to learn how to do a better maths lesson. I'm going to learn how to plan a better school trip. I'm going to learn how to mark more effectively. We need to learn how to do our well-being ourselves, as well as the school putting things in place. We do need to learn how to do that, and somebody needs to teach us it.
So good. And I think if I could synthesize two key things, one thing that keeps coming to mind is, let's not expect ourselves to master this instantly. It would be great to see schools and leaders building this into the culture and the structure of the school itself.
Yes.
So rather than individual teachers going, well, I've got to go and sneak this 15 minutes, leaders should be going, we need to build a culture. Absolutely. And a system. And I guess the other filter too is helping teachers go from, this 15 minutes is something I'm stealing from these poor, neglected children, to here's 15 minutes that's going to allow me to be more of a blessing to them.
Absolutely. Empowering people to understand that that's as important or even more important than doing all those other things. There's no point in you getting an amazing art lesson planned with the most beautiful resources if you're not going to have the capacity to teach it properly in the afternoon.
So good.
Because you're too tired or you're hungry. So it goes hand in hand. You know, all the amazing resources you can pull out or the amazing creativity ideas are wonderful, but if you haven't got the capacity to teach it, then it loses its point, doesn't it?
Well, and the other thing is, I'll put this in the show notes, I'll have to dig it up, the actual title, but there was a book I read out of Harvard Business School years ago. The thesis was basically saying that we've been raised to think about time management, and the thesis was we need to think about energy management. So the whole book, and I'll put it in the show notes, I have to remember who wrote it, but that really stuck with me because we've learned in a sort of structuralist developed world mentality that we structure time and we try and find maximum efficiencies. But the point in the book was really our best performance and our best interaction in relationship tends to come when our energy levels are actually good. I did a podcast a few weeks ago. It was hilarious. Like I woke up and I was tired but I went out and I trained and I felt great. Had a coffee coming back and went into the studio and it was like I was on crack. I was just so jacked up on the exercise. And Catherine, yep. I'm not recommending this as a strategy, people, but I was like, wow, it's interesting when your energy's right up, you really bring a lot of creativity and passion to what you're doing. So again, I'm not advocating that as the way to do it, but if we get our nutrition right, our hydration right, we get some breaks, then we tend to bring a better level of energy to what we're doing.
Yeah, you're very right. And that's when as well, though, it then comes down to the twofold system of it does need to be, the facilities need to be there. So one of the big questions I ask schools is, and they look at me weird when I ask them this, and they say, have your teachers got access to a toilet? And they look at me and say, well, yeah. I said, well, really, have they got access to a toilet? Especially in secondary schools here, we're finding that there's like two staff toilets in the entire building. And some people are way too far away. And they're like, well, why is that important? I said, well, people need a drink. And if you're not, I know that, and teachers have told me they don't drink water through the day because they haven't got time to go to the toilet.
So true.
And it's just ridiculous.
I remember when I was like speaking a huge amount, 3 or 4 times a week. And I remember going to one very exclusive school in Melbourne. And they said, do you want a coffee? I said, sure. And I walked in and this thing was like the Sistine Chapel of staff meeting dining rooms. Yeah. And this coffee machine was like just phenomenal. It just gave this incredible coffee. Now, as you probably know, I don't know what it's like in the UK. Australia is a very strong coffee culture now. But most schools provide coffee to teachers, which I'm pretty sure is listed as a cruel and unusual punishment.
And yep.
the United Nations has tried to ban it. And it's like, what does it cost a school to lose staff and the turnover rates and the hiring and recruiting in terms of providing some amenities like, you know,
yep.
toilets, decent food, access to coffee? I mean, you pay a couple of grand for a really nice coffee machine, but what do you pay on recruitment? So listen, the last thing I wanted to ask you on the negative side of the ledger, because I want us to start talking about what you think works and what we can do. I'm interested in something that I experienced, and I don't know whether it's specific to young aspirational teachers, but when I came into the profession, I really wanted to get ahead early on. And I was like, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is I never wanted to show weakness. I never wanted to complain about the crushing extra duties. You know, do you see some of that? How do we help people go, it's okay to say no, it's okay to say this is too much?
Yeah, that, you're very right. It's especially when you get into a school and you kind of, you do your newly qualified year and you pass that and you're excited as well and you want to take things on. Oh yeah, give me a subject to lead. I want to do this and I want to do that. But then the realization, like you said, of then life gets in the way a little bit. And I've had a lot of parents and friends have said, oh, I don't want my child to have that teacher. They're new. I was like, honestly, let the new teachers are the best ones to have sometimes because they're the ones that have got all the time. They're the ones that will stay up all night long making resources because they haven't got a family.
Yeah.
Whereas we need to understand that the great majority though of our workforce has got other commitments and which are important. They've got children. Like you said earlier, when I was exactly the same as you, that within the first 2 years of teaching that I bought my first house, I'd got married and renovated a house, all of those kind of things. And the great majority of our workforce are going through things like that. And we want to have career progression, but at the same time, we need to have a life. And we do need to learn to say no. It's just about empowering teachers, I think, about of being able to say it. But then I guess on the other side of that coin, the leaders do need to understand that and understand what it was like for them. There's a lot at the moment about head teachers staying in the profession. They just need to, I think, keep their finger in and understand what life is actually like on the front line.
Yeah.
And for them, if they're being understanding of what it's like to do this job, if you remember back when your children were young and they were staying up all night and they're waking up 3-4 times a night, how was that? How did it feel to you? And create a culture that can empower people to say, oh yes, I'd like to take that on.
Yeah.
Or no, I really can't. Not this month. I'd love to do that, but maybe not just right now because my kid's teething. Or I'd love to be able to do that, but next summer my daughter's going to be doing her GCSEs and I think I need to be a little bit more present for her, and I need to be able to make sure I can get her to school on time for her exams. So being able to look at the person as a whole will, and really getting to know your staff helps with that as well, I think. I think a lot of people just will just stay in their offices and not get to know their staff, really get to know their staff.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
So absolutely. And it's
know your staff and understand, you know, what age their kids, do you know what age their kids are? Do you know what their children are going through? Do you know if they're having family problems, marital problems? Have they got a mum with dementia that they need to go out and see every night? Yeah. Because that's going to impact on their work. And if you really get to know people, you can then, you can understand things that when someone says, look, I can't do this, I'm really sorry, but I cannot take this job on board, this extra responsibility you're giving me, not just now, because you're like, oh right, of course, yes, absolutely. Because you know them and you know they're not doing it just to trying to shirk their responsibilities, but actually because they really can't mental load capacity deal with that right now.
Yeah,
but then there'll be other members of staff that are ready and willing at that time in their life to do that job.
Gosh, you make such a good point. Like it's a leadership thing, isn't it? It's about developing, I guess, a culture of care. Like my postgrad background, I did my second master's in something called philosophical anthropology, which was like, I guess, the philosophy of what it means to be human. And we actually did a 2-week intensive at one point with a world expert on love, on the philosophical understanding of love. And there was this moment, I was 37 at the time, I remember it so clearly, because this world famous professor wrote on the board, he said, I will write for you the accurate definition of love. And I leaned in, I thought, this will be good. And he wrote this definition, which will sound quite obvious to many people, but he wrote, to love is to will the good of the other. And that always struck with me because we've, you know, Western cultures, we've highly sentimentalized love and we've emotivized it. So we only really understand it in that emotional, you know, or the concept of eros. But the deeper understanding of it is that to say that you love your staff or you love your teachers, if you're a leader, is to be able to say that I desire that my leadership brings about the good of these people.
Absolutely.
So as a fundamental filter, it's like, you know, will this extra work or this promotion be good for them right now? Will it be loving? Are we going to build, as crazy as it sounds, to build a loving school culture where we actually take care of people better, where we actually go, how are we going to actually look after each other?
So, yeah, and is there a point to it as well? That's the other thing as well, is what is the end goal of asking that person to do that as well? Is it going to create the greater good for them, for the school, or am I just doing it for the sake of doing it?
It's so, yeah, it's my observation of huge numbers of schools all over the world is that when leaders and teachers get it right, you get these unique communities where people want to be.
Yes.
And when people want to be there, the kids want to be there and the parents want to support it. And it's quite a beautiful thing when it comes together.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we've talked about everything that is of concern and that we need to be aware of. You're leading this wonderful initiative, this business, Nourish the Workplace. When you go in, we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about what process you look at, what process you put in place. I know you do a lot of survey stuff. You look at what's happening, and then let's talk about what you see as working. How do you actually help schools to create transformative change? So let's look at it. When you walk into a school context and the leadership says to you, okay, we're going to get you to run a workshop, we're going to get you to do a project here, where do you start?
It's kind of hard to know which schools to approach sometimes, because I feel that there's three different types of schools. So there's the ones that are doing wellbeing really well. They're doing it, they get all of this. They've got the leaders, like you just said, they are those magical places where everybody wants to be there. And those people kind of work with me to be able to just get the kudos of getting the award at the end of it. They want a bit of a recognition for what they're doing, and they like that. So they're the easy ones, because they're doing it and it's just well done. Yes, you're 8 and 9s out of 10s on all of your survey. Brilliant. You're doing it all wonderfully. Then there's the complete opposite to that, who the leaders have no idea about wellbeing. They're the ones that are leading schools that have got teachers leaving in their droves. I kind of feel that sometimes that I can't even help them, because they're not in the right place. If you don't realise that you need help, that it's very hard to help somebody, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've then got the middle ground people. Of they know that it's important, but they're just not sure what to do, or they know that they want to do something, or they've tried things, but they're not sure if it's working. And they're really the ones that I find really interesting to work with, because they take a little bit longer, but you can make such a massive impact on the school.
Yeah.
So the way that it works is I don't actually ever visit a school. Yep. It's all done very remotely. When I set this business up, my daughters were going through issues in their life that they needed me at home. Yep. So I made the decision that I was going to set the business up to mean that I didn't ever have to leave my house if I didn't want to. Yep. Just as a bit for isolation. But it is all done remotely. So the schools contact me, we send, and I get to know the school a little bit. They give me some ideas as to where they are with wellbeing, what they do. And then the survey that I designed kind of does it all for them. It's very clever in the fact that it allows the teachers to have a voice. It's always anonymous. So the teachers get to rate their school in as 25 different questions, covering everything that we've just talked about, because it's important to cover all of those things and to work with teachers to understand that. And it kind of then comes back to them taking ownership for themselves, because they haven't realized that's important. So when I ask a question have you got enough time to have lunch, it kind of then triggers their thinking into, oh no, I don't take enough time for lunch, maybe this is on me actually, not the school. Yeah. Because the ability to have lunch is there, but I don't take it. Yeah. And sometimes then they'll come in and on the comments, there's a comment section for every question, and then they'll say that and say, oh, but actually that's not the school's fault, that's my fault. Then, so there's the ability to leave a comment, which gives the school all they need. The teachers know how the school can be improved with wellbeing, or how well it's doing anyway. So I very, very rarely have to actually give any recommendations, because once you read the report, it's all very plain and clear from the teachers themselves, the people. And also, it's not just the teachers, that's something important to point out, is this goes, I make sure it goes to everybody that works at the school.
Yeah.
So the admin teams, the site teams, the support teams, everybody in the offices, they're all a part to play and they're all important. And they basically say what is working and what's not working, and then we move on from there.
And does it sometimes become a free kick for disgruntled teachers? Do you get a bit of that? Do you get a whole bunch yes. of people who are like, I've been wanting to say this for 10 years and now I've yes. got a chance?
But that's kind of important as it well. Is, so yeah. to try and get across to the head teachers that some schools I work with will have a very, very positive score. But I will always give them the range of scores. So they'll have an average. And so sometimes you'll get a really well looked after school that's getting averages of 8s and 9s. But you'll get one person that rates it as a 1 or a 2. And I always say that they need to be they need to be dealt with. Dealt with sounds awful, but their voice needs to be heard. Yeah. So I will always give the average, but also the range, so that they understand that, yeah, you're getting a massively average score of 8 or 9 out of 10, but your range was 2 to 10. And that person that put 2 is just as important as the person that put 10, because they're the ones that they're having an issue. And if they're having an issue, then you need to deal with that issue and either sort it out with them or have a conversation about, maybe this isn't the school for you. Is there something I can help with? Is there a reason? Is there a reason going on at home that you're this upset? You know, you need to work with that person to understand it is always anonymous. All of these surveys are anonymous, but the majority of the time, if you've got people like that in your school, you'll probably know who they are.
I was going to say, yes. So something I'm curious about is, this is fundamentally a communication exercise. It's a chance for people to be heard. And I have a favorite quote. You may have heard it, which was, you know, the greatest misconception about communication is that it actually took place. So often people think that they're surprised. They get a report like this and they're like, really? This? How did we not know this? Mm. And that's my question. Is it simply that schools are such busy every day? You know, it's just the stuff happening, the weeks roll on, the term rolls on. Is that what stops this level of openness and communication? Or is it do schools end up with a culture of don't rock the boat? Why is it necessary to need this amazing service that you're bringing? Why aren't schools dealing with this as they go?
Some of it, I think, is pride. So lots of schools will say to me, I don't need that. I've got an open door policy. My teachers tell me everything. My staff tell me everything. Right. I said, well, do they really? You know, it's realistically, is a 23-year-old newly qualified teacher going to come to you, a head teacher, and say, I'm really struggling? No, they're not. And I really not in the vast majority of cases, they're not going to be able to come to you and say that. They don't want to look weak. They don't want to look like they can't do their job because they're worried about what the future will hold for you. A 45-year-old teacher is not going to come and say to you, look, I've not slept in weeks because my teenagers are having issues. My mum's having issues. I can't cope with this. My children, the class are driving me mad. They're not necessarily going to come to you and say that, A, because leaders aren't in their offices a lot because they're off doing other things, which they need to, you know, important things that they need to be doing. There's not very often that time for communication where you sit down and just have a chat. I think I only ever actually properly sat down and had a chat like that when it was what we call performance management. Yeah. That was twice a year. No, you can't just leave it for twice a year to have a conversation with somebody that's that important in your school. So yes, they feel like they're doing communication. And some schools will even say, oh, I run my own survey. Yeah, but even if it's anonymous, teachers have said to me, I don't like being truthful because they'll work out who I am. They'll work it out. They'll work out which computer it came from. And they're that worried about telling them the truth that they don't. So it does open the floodgates somewhat when they do mine, because they know that it only ever comes to me. Yeah. although I then do pass their comments on, it is completely anonymous. I will never break that confidence. A school has never asked me to, but I would never, if they came back to me and said, can you work out who that comment was from? No, that's not the point of it.
Gosh, you can.
But I think, yes, some people feel like they're opening up their lines of communication, but just they're not doing it. They're not going far enough.
Well, I think you can tell it when a school's in trouble when teachers are saying things like, I'm worried they're going to find my IP address and work out which computer I sent it from.
Yes, then you are really in trouble. That response, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, listening to you, I was educated by the Maris brothers, and early in my career I worked with them, and my son now is attending a fantastic Maris school. And the essence of the Maris thing is around what they call the family spirit, which is they try and build literally a family spirit in terms of how interactions take place, language. It's done really beautifully. And listening to you just a moment ago, the parallels even with family and marriage, like you can be in a marriage and go for a long time without having the deeper conversations that you need to have, without prioritizing them, right? And there's another idea out of Harvard called strong situations, which is that good organizations build these things called strong situations where they have rituals or systems or, you know, a way for people to actually communicate. Like, I mean, Karen and I would call that date night. You know, before COVID, we would go out pretty regularly and have a chance for a deeper discussion about, you know, all sorts of stuff. So part of it must be just the intensity of school life, that those structures aren't there for people to have honest, you know, and to have the time for open discussions.
Yeah, and also you're very right, having the time for it, having the culture for it as well. We're not necessarily not great at being told that we're not doing a very good job either. People don't really like to be told that they're not doing a very good job at something, are they? So sure. you don't want to open yourself up to criticism. But also some of it is as well just not understanding what is important. So it's not, people don't realize what is important. So it's, when I ask about the staff room, and people, I put an awful lot of onus on how good is your staff room, people will say, well, you know, why would I spend money on the staff room when I can't afford this and I can't afford that with my children for the pupils? But you need to give the staff the culture of being able to go to a staff room where they can just sit and laugh. You know, that is another thing that we had a good Twitter conversation about a while ago, about if you can hear laughter in your staff room, that's a really, really good thing. If you walk into your staff room and there's no one there, that's not a good thing.
As long as you don't hear like laughter and all of a sudden you hear, shush, shush, they're coming, they're coming. Yes. Stop having fun.
Absolutely. Now,
before we wrap up, well, before we wrap up, there's two key things I want to do. I want to talk about, let's talk about individual teachers and the strategies that they, in your opinion, can and should be putting in place for personal self-care and well-being. And then I want to talk about what you think schools can do at the macro level. But so take us through, for all the teachers listening to this, what should they be thinking about with their own personal care and well-being that they may not be doing now? What should they be thinking about? What can they start doing?
I would definitely recommend like the find 15. So find 15 minutes in your day to take some time for you. Eat, drink, water. Not caffeine. Preferably water. Definitely not alcohol to get home. Find 15 minutes in your work day to just take some time for you. I think that's a brilliant first starting point. A quick shout out as well to Teacher Five a Day, which is something I'm involved in over here, which is a voluntary organisation. Hashtag Teacher Five a Day. Find that on Twitter or on Facebook and get involved in that, which is the five key pillars of well-being. Yep. So I have to really rack my brains to make sure I remember all of them. That's notice, connect, volunteer, exercise, and I always forget the last one. I'll come to me in a second. But they are the five things that you need to make sure that you do, not necessarily every day, but within your week. Find time to do all of those things. Even if it is just sit outside for 2 minutes and notice the birdsong. Mm. If it's connect with somebody, send someone a text at lunchtime. So I think they're the very first steps. Find 15 minutes in your day to find something for yourself to do, to just switch off, regenerate. It's a bit like plugging yourself in with a charger. Yeah. Plug your charger into you, fill yourself up, fill your battery up again, ready to start off for the afternoon. And then, sorry, what was the second question?
Well, the first one was really, we're just talking about the practical strategies for individual teachers. And I mean, listening to you, there's also a lot of great apps coming online now. Like, have you heard of Calm?
Yes. Yeah. So using Calm's good. Headspace. Yeah. And in the UK, Headspace is free for education people as well.
Well, Calm is obviously one of the big ones, and I've got the app here and I fell in love with it for one reason, rain sounds. I have this thing for rain sounds. Yeah. Rain sounds make me relaxed. So I have this app and it's whatever I pay for it, but I only use the rain sounds. And one of our family things is we often travel globally as a family and we can't sleep in hotels as a family without rain sounds. So the kids are like, Dad, I can't sleep, put the rain sounds on.
Lovely.
And the other one, just interesting, I found I find if I'm trying to really concentrate, white noise can actually be really good. On YouTube, there's one I've been listening to today while trying to work on some intense stuff of airplane engines for 10 hours. Wow. Now, I didn't listen to it for 10 hours, but it's 10 hours of jet airplane noise. And I just find that stuff allows me to settle and concentrate. So there's apps, there's online stuff. What about the teachers listening going, oh, here we go, exercise? I mean, it's not, we're not asking them to run the Boston Marathon next week, are we?
No, no, not at all. And again, coming full circle back to all this stuff that we're doing with being in isolation, just going out for a quick walk around the block is enough exercise. Or doing something online, yoga, it doesn't have to be physical, high impact running marathons like you're suggesting, going out for a 20 mile bike ride, anything like that. Just something to get your heart pumping and to give you something to do, which will, because also when you exercise, you can't think about anything else. Like if you're doing a Zumba class, you can't worry about whether or not you've done your marking if you're concentrating on getting the moves right, because you'll fall over if you don't concentrate. So it just gives you something to take your concentration off into something else and just to give you some clarity and some time. So it doesn't need to be anything huge. It is just to go and focus your mind on something else, to take it away, give your mind a break.
Sure. And anything that you can think of specifically at the moment with the lockdown, like for all these teachers, anything that, I mean, how do they adapt some of this to the context of, you know, really restricted movement at the moment?
Again, have a look online on apps. There's a whole load of things that have been given to people online to be able to do. There's a brilliant one in the UK called PE with Joe Wicks, which is at 9 o'clock every morning on YouTube. And check him out. He's hilarious. And he's 9 o'clock every morning. And it's a big thing. All my friends are all doing it. Our kids have all wandered off because they're but us, I was doing bunny hops and kangaroo jumps in my lounge yesterday morning, all on my own. And actually, that really, we're going to have this whole bank of resources left over from this, because these will all be on people's YouTube channels and Facebook groups. And there's Strictly Come Dancing dancers that are providing dance lessons at 1 o'clock on every afternoon. Wow. There's a whole raft of information out there that you can find, that save it in your saves and then use it afterwards. So use this time to try and find these kind of things and do an online Zoom with a yoga teacher, or find a pumping dance class to do. Wow. Just have some fun in your lounge.
Well, it's so interesting. My son, who's 11, he did his drum lesson today. He's got drums in his bedroom, and he did his drum lesson today by Zoom with his teacher.
Yeah,
which was really cool.
It's clever, isn't it? And yeah, we are learning to do all these different things now, aren't we? And you need to take these things on as a positive, that we can learn how to be in a different kind of space and to keep these on as habits and to take them forwards and to use them.
Absolutely. I have another podcast that I do in the sort of business space, and I was talking today about, you know, in the midst of this lockdown, a lot of people are shrinking. Their world is shrinking, and they're like, there's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. And I'm like, there's an argument for going the other way, which is to write some new goals and to actually try some new things. And, you know, I'm going to go out and run this marathon on Sunday. Simply, I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't. I just thought, I'm not going to sit around the house. Why don't I do something crazy, like go and do that? So, okay. So the last thing I want to talk about is, I'll try it as a thought experiment. We've talked about what individuals can do, what teachers can do to manage well-being. Imagine that a school has a relatively blank check. Let's do this as a thought experiment. So the government says to a school, hey, we're gonna use you as a pilot. Here's £1 million or whatever. What do you think schools could throw money at in a perfect world, or, you know, maybe if they're not flushed with cash, they could do something similar. Where do you think schools can get leverage? What do they need to think about? What do leaders, principals need to think about to create better well-being in their schools?
That's a lovely question, isn't it? So number one, always pay for Nourish the Workplace. Yeah. Number two, invest their money in facilities for staff. So I do have a big passion about the staff room. Have a look at your staff room. As you were saying, buy a coffee machine. You know, pay for pay for fruit, fresh fruit to be delivered every week instead of biscuits, because as much as teachers love biscuits and cake, it's not good for their stress levels to have their sugar spiking up all the time. Yep. So invest in something that's maybe you can put some of that money aside to be a weekly thing that you pay for people to have juice in the staff room instead of tea and coffee, because not everybody drinks tea and coffee. Pay for some good quality tea and coffee, fruit teas, herbal teas, as well as just your bog standard cheap tea bags.
Yeah.
And things like making sure there's enough fridges and microwaves in your staff room, because teachers do not want to wait in a queue for one microwave to heat their dinner up. They're just going to walk off and not eat it.
Yeah.
Things like that. And then investing in wellbeing CPD as much as you're investing in curriculum CPD.
Sure.
And I don't necessarily, there's a lot of people do this wrong, the way of saying, well, I'm going to get a yoga teacher to come in every week. Well, not everybody wants to do yoga. So actually opening up to their staff and saying, okay, what could help you with time? Is it time management? Is it marking? Is it, you know, do we need to teach people how to mark effectively so that it's not taking them as long? Do we need to work on teaching people how to do time management? And I work with them, with people on that as well. I have a coaching company as well. That's mainly one of the things that I do, is helping people with time management and working out, well, you know, you don't need to spend that long on that, and let's prioritize on what's important. So yeah, spending the money and asking the staff what they would like as well. What you think as a leader sitting in your office is very different to what sometimes what the staff need. And what the office staff need is different to what the teachers need, to what the support staff need. So actually opening up the lines of communication and actually asking them what they need and then listening to them and spending the money on what they think.
Which is
going to be different in every single school as well. That's a really important point to make. It's really hard to make, you know, generalized recommendations, because every single school is different, because every single cohort of children is different and every single cohort of teachers is different. So that is definitely why, as we said earlier on, it all comes down to communication, because you need to ask your particular teachers and staff what they need.
Gosh, it's so simple, isn't it? And yet
it's so simple.
It's like, I remember years ago, Tony Robbins said, you know, you ask the managers and every manager says the problems are your workers. You ask the workers and they say the workers say the problems are managers. It's like, it's just this misconception, this missing each other, isn't it? The ability to go, what do we need to do here to make this a great place that you want to come to work? So let's finish with, what do you think is the fundamental mind shift that teachers and leaders need to make about this basic broad topic of well-being, resilience, longevity in the profession? How do we need to start thinking about this? Because obviously we haven't been. And what is the mindset shift?
I think it comes down to respect and trust. There's a lot of that lacking in the profession. So when people are loading teachers on with work, it's because they don't trust them to do it themselves properly. So if you can respect your staff to understand that they have a life, that they're not married to the job as such, that they have a life, and as we were talking about earlier on, getting to know them and respecting all of their lives and respecting the fact that they go home to other things and to other people, and to build that into your school, that's one issue. But then also to really trust your staff, to pull back on that workload and trust them that we only ever get into this job because we want to teach the children. And to trust them to teach the children. 99.9% of teachers are going to do their very best for those children at all times, because that's why we came into this profession in the first place. 100%. So just trust them to do the job themselves properly. Stop interfering with them. Stop trying to meddle with how they're doing it. Because ultimately, if you treat your staff well and trust them, they will get the best out of the pupils. And essentially, that's all we want in the first place.
Absolutely. Kimberly, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Tell everybody where they can find you, social media, website, where can people go deeper into the work that you're doing?
Fantastic, thank you. My website is nourishtheworkplace.com. Then my email is nourishtheworkplace@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at nourishworkplace, but without the A. So it's nourishworkplace, if you see what I mean. But if you Googled Nourish the Workplace on Twitter, I'd come up. And I am on Facebook as well, Nourish the Workplace, or Kimberly Evans.
Fantastic. Kimberly, I'm going to keep having a chat with you as we end this moment, but I want to thank you on behalf of everybody for making time for us under these challenging circumstances. Thank you for the amazing work you're doing in this crucial space, and we look forward to having you back on the podcast soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, hey again, everybody. Jonathan with you once again. Wasn't that great? We had a few laughs. We covered so much rich content there, stuff that we're familiar with. But what came for me out of that discussion was just this sense of it's not rocket science, is it? The things that we need to be doing, the basics that are so important, just seem to get overlooked in the busyness of school life. I know many of us now are working from home, but that's going to change. So I hope this episode helped you think about self-care now on a personal level, and then has got you thinking about how things need to be different when you're back in your school community. All right, so I'd love you to share this episode with people. So many teachers need to hear the wisdom that Kimberly shared. So do that for me. She's told us where you can find her, so you go and check out her links. Please make sure you've subscribed to this podcast, bringing out great content and interviews on a daily basis. You can find me, Instagram, JonathanDoyle47. And do me a favor, go check out my new book for educators. This new book, Finishing Strong, is absolutely awesome. It's the distillation of 20 years of my seminars with young people around the world in one book. It's called Finishing Strong, and it's designed to help young people really finish their education well through a series of, I guess, paradigm shifts, mindsets, and practical exercises. So do this for me. Go to jonathandoyle.co, jonathandoyle.co, and just go to the books tab. Go to the books tab on jonathandoyle.co, and you're going to find the new book, Finishing Strong. I want you to grab yourself a copy. Every teacher, every parent needs a copy of this book, and we need to get it in the hands of as many young people as possible. So go and check that out, jonathandoyle.co on the books tab. All right, everybody. Kimberly, if you're listening, thanks again for joining us. Thanks for the wonderful work you're doing, everybody. Thanks for joining this special show. My name is Jonathan Doyle, and we're going to have another episode for you very soon.